welcome to another episode of Records Revisited Podcast, dedicated to the magic of music. I'm your DJ, your MC, host on the East Coast. I'm Ben Montgomery. Welcome to another episode of the Foo Fighters Sidecast. Joining me is the man who, when I try and psychoanalyze his scores, he tells me, well, there you go again, putting words into my mouth. This one's for you to know and for me to find out. Here's my co-host from the Left Coast, Wayne Fugate.
Hola, Ben Hami.
Next up, you know him from all the other Foos episodes, some Wilco episodes, some Toad the Wet Sprocket episodes. He's been digging in down inside. He will start again. Subterranean. Here's Jeff Frame.
Why'd you use that one?
I don't know. I don't know.
Why not? It's all good.
Why not?
I don't know. We'll get to it.
Okay.
We will get to it. Hey, I'm back. I'm ready for more Foo Fighters.
You are.
What more can I say than that?
All right. Last but not least, we're supposed to have a special guest, and he just texted me. Okay, we're starting this. We started this 24 minutes late. Hold on a sec. He's texting me. So sorry. Did you start? Yeah. Yeah, we started, Kevin.
Did you start yet?
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Well, you probably would like what I just wrote to him. This is another, that's what she said. He said, did you start? And I'm like, yeah, we did. Jump on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what he said, I think.
That could go either way.
There you go. That could go
either
way.
Yeah,
yeah.
That could sure.
That's gender neutral. Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Well,
just to be fair.
Should we just kind of wait for Kevin to show up?
Yeah, let's do like when you have to walk into church after everybody's already there and sneak up to the third row from the front with everybody watching you.
Okay. Okay. Jeff, what t-shirt are you wearing?
I'm wearing I went to Color Rainiers. I didn't put a music shirt on. I got a Rainier shirt last time I was up in Seattle, and I'm wearing that. It's a soft shirt. It's comfortable.
It's good. Wayne.
I want comfort over message today.
All right. Wayne, what t-shirt are you wearing?
So my brother was in Texas, and he said, do you want me to get you a t-shirt? And I said, of course. And of all of the many things he could have gotten me, I think he thinks it's funny, but it says Willie Waylon, George, and Beyonce. So Texas's favorite... sons and children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I listened to a Beyonce album the other day. I don't remember which one. Yeah.
I'm not hating on B. I'm
pretty much an all the single ladies guy, you know?
I like Irreplaceable. That's the Beyonce.
Yeah, I don't know the dance for that one, so that's
I don't have the dance for any of them.
The single ladies one, I can kind of get going a little bit, you know.
Okay.
It's yeah.
Well, I'm
just glad there's not video on this podcast, you know.
No, I'm wearing my Who t-shirt again.
Who?
Yeah. I think I still owe you that t-shirt, right, Wayne? I haven't sent that to you yet.
Not yet. I have a couple t-shirts to send you too. So I wish there was a way you could pay for someone else's postage. But.
Exactly. I haven't done a whole lot of t-shirt buying. Like there are a couple different shows that I went to here in June that I did not buy t-shirts. Churches, I didn't buy their t-shirts. Wasn't having their style. It was geared towards. Here's what I thought was funny. It's geared towards college kids, but yet I would say 75% of the crowd,
old dudes.
So yeah, I mean not all dudes. There was a lot of older ladies there as well. But so yeah, I didn't buy that. Styx, Loverboy, and REO Speedwagon. I did not buy a t-shirt.
That's shocking.
You know,
honestly, on the reverse, their t-shirts were geared toward the old dudes, and it was all young college kids at that show.
No, it was all dudes. It was all old dudes. Wayne, I would say this. This was one of the jokes that we used to have back in the day. We used to put our fingers, you know, like we're fingers crossed, and do the get lucky right next to our butt cheek. I'm like, I don't know. Do you think you're going to score tonight, Wayne? I'm going to get lucky. If they would have had a t-shirt with Mike Reno's butt with the fingers crossed, I would have bought one.
Those t-shirts probably had large font, didn't they? That's probably that's what I imagine. They
had large font. They had large.
Your Who shirt has a pretty large font. Oh, it's a pretty large font shirt as well.
Yeah, it's pretty.
That's very much. We know the age of most of our audience at this point, and you don't have to put on your readers to be able to see what's on here.
that is true story. True story. All right.
Now, did he say he was coming on tonight or?
He says he's trying. So I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what that means.
That's what he said.
I feel like a Yoda quote coming on. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we need to. Do we need to stop recording? Like,
I don't know. I don't edit these things.
I hear it's a pain in the ass. I hear it all the fucking time.
It sounds like it. Yeah. Don't waste one of your F-bombs so early, man.
So let me ask you this. You guys have been plotting behind my back about possibly doing episode. That's not really plotting.
I'm just trying to... You're doubting me. I'm just trying to show you how dedicated I am to this.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to kick ass, man.
So you guys are going to do an episode. You're going to record it.
Yes.
Who's editing this for you?
You, the editor.
No, I'm on break.
Well, then
I'm going to be on break.
Back.
Who's editing? Who's editing?
We better be tight for that one, Wayne. We might want to do a rehearsal.
Or I say we go replacements and we just do it. And then it's good. We'll turn it in just like in school. We'll turn it in. Figure we'll probably get at least a D.
We're going to turn in our first draft.
We're going to pass this class.
Right, C's get degrees, baby. We're not looking to blow you away.
Wayne, you may have wanted to attach yourself to a guest who would actually do the editing because, like, Jeff, how many episodes of your podcast did you do before you guys went on hiatus? Like 70?
70, I think.
This is about
how many of those episodes did you edit?
Zero. I have people that work for me.
People for that.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Get
them to edit this one as well. You got people that work for you.
Now this sounds like even more fun. The unedited version.
Yeah. It's raw. Yeah.
I'll put it up.
It is raw and unfiltered. As many F-bombs as we want.
Yeah.
Now I'm scared. Now you guys are messing with the product.
you're gonna be like, this is tame and they didn't come up with anything extra. It's just normal stuff.
Instead,
we're gonna talk a big talk.
Instead of rating MA, it's gonna be rating Matt, as in rating Matt Nathanson level of F-bombs. Is that what you're telling me, Wayne?
Oh.
No, it's organic. You make this F-bomb thing seem like it's some sort of a stunt, but it's how I talk.
They have to come from the gut, man.
Yeah, it's the loophole. If you're passionate about it, you got to be passionate about it. I don't.
I do give you the loophole. What he's referring to is before we start recording, I tell all of the guests, I'm like, we try and keep this PG-13. However,
if
you feel passionate about a particular song or topic,
I've been on.
Go ahead. All right, Kevin.
So sorry.
All right. Well, we're welcoming Kevin Peters, who just jumped on. Welcome.
Thank you.
You're a few minutes late.
A few, yeah. My bad. I'm so sorry.
Did you have a good excuse for that?
Kids baseball travel.
Okay, that's a good excuse.
It was extra innings.
That's a good excuse. All right. You are excused. We give you all the excuses in the world for that. All right. What were we talking about? Oh, Wayne and Jeff are trying to let me know that they are going to record an episode while I'm on break.
Oh, great.
Which yeah. I
can't wait to hear it.
I still don't believe.
It was supposed to be a secret, Ben.
Was it? No, it's not.
I don't know.
Who gets to pick the album?
I did. I have to do
Wayne
this.
Did.
Wayne got it.
I have enough anxiety over this whole thing. I got to pick the guest and the record. I'm trying to stay in my wheelhouse, in my comfort zone.
He said nice things about me on the police episode so that I would do it.
Oh. He did say a lot of nice things, which I'm like, are we talking about the same Jeff?
Yeah. No, I use it as my go to sleep sound now. I just go to sleep with the positive affirmations of Wayne. That's
good. Make a ringtone or something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it is so full disclosure, because on all of these episodes, Jeff keeps peeling back the curtain and letting everyone know that we have not been recording these in sequential order. So it's been about a month since we've recorded a Foos episode. So we're
this is still in sequence, right? This is the sequence?
No, we recorded Concrete and Gold.
Huh?
We recorded Concrete and Gold.
Oh, we did?
Do you recall? Now I'm
yeah, we did.
Now I'm peeling back the curtain. Yeah, I'm peeling back the curtain. All right.
So Sonic, I forgot.
Sonic Highways, that's what we're talking about tonight. So, eighth studio album, released in November of 2014. This one is a little bit different than the other ones, because it was done in multiple cities. It was part of an HBO series, which, full disclosure, I have not seen it.
Oh,
you haven't?
I have not seen any episode. I have never bought HBO. I probably should have. I think I did have HBO. I had HBO for a month.
Do you have Apple TV?
I do have Apple TV.
That's what it's on. It's not on HBO.
Strangely.
Here's the thing. What? I never think about YouTube, so I was like, oh, it's on Apple TV. It's on and then YouTube. It just dawned on me earlier today. It was like, I wonder if it's on YouTube. And now I'm like, now they're hour-long episodes. So I only was able to watch 45 minutes of the Seattle one, which I can't imagine that the other seven are going to have as much interest to me. But the Seattle one is awesome. You have to at least watch that one.
I loved the series. I really kind of intended to revisit it for this revisit specifically. I was like, that's a great excuse to dive back into that, because it, you know, I saw it when it very first came out. I saw it episode by episode when they dropped them, and I loved the series. I thought it was fantastic. I liked all the different cities. I thought I learned some things. I thought it was a very cool premise. In terms of premise, it kind of reminds me a little bit. My boys went to this arts high school and they were in the cinematic arts program. They do this thing called like 64-hour film festival. And so they would get their topic on Friday afternoon. They would get handed a genre. It was like, one of them was like a Kanye Westeros drama. So it was like Game of Thrones mixed with Kanye West. Like, it was that sort of stuff where they just got thrown this mishmash of a Middle Earth musical. So it was a Hobbit musical. And these kids, these high school kids had to write, an 8 to 10 minute movie. They had to write it, cast it, do all the costumes, find locations, film it, and edit it all within 64 hours over the weekend. They just didn't sleep. But they also, one of the things that they would have is, in addition to those weird genres, there was a prop that had to be in every single one. It was, it might be a chalk eraser, it might be some other thing. Every single one of them had to have a character named Donnie Ding Dong or something. They had to have a character, and they all had to have a line like, we all go bump bump in the night or something. So you would have these weird elements that they had to force feed into their thing. And that's kind of a little bit of what this has for me, of when you just listen to these as songs, and that's what you're doing with it. Some of the lines are like, huh? If you've seen the episodes, you get what he's referencing. It has a little, there's a little bit more meaning to it. It's interesting. And it's also interesting. You talked about me peeling back the curtain. I think this is kind of a fun way for a Foo Fighters fan to peel back the curtain on the way a guy like a Dave Grohl might write. Is he learns these things from these people. He has these conversations and then he sits down and he writes and you hear nuggets and little bits and pieces and chunks, the button on a string and all those things. Those come from conversations he has with people in these cities. And, a couple of them are a tad disappointing to me, and we'll get to those, but a lot of them have a lot of those real nuggets in there, and it kind of gives you this idea of like, oh, well, that's where some of his other songs, he probably writes a similar way. It's conversations he's had with people, little experiences that he's had with, you know, with as himself, and that he incorporates in these things in a way that is musical or rhymes or whatever, but it's all there.
Which makes sense. I mean, I do that with my own writing.
Sure.
There's pieces of characters of people that I know interspersed into my characters. And Jeff, you may not like one of the characters that I'm creating because it's loosely based off of you. So.
All right. Is he real fat and funny?
No.
Oh. No. Well, how's that based on me?
It was based on you.
Well, it was based on you 20 years ago.
Oh, so skinny and handsome and funny.
You once had hair.
I did. I still have more than you.
Absolutely, you do.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's the dig you went with. I got to be honest. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, you were riffing there, and you grabbed hold of hair, and then you regretted it because you knew that.
No, it's all good. All right. Yeah. Well, Kevin, did you see the Sonic Highways series?
Yeah. In fact, it's actually kind of why I picked this album when you put it on the Patreon is I figured the research would be pretty easy. You know, there's an hour about every single song. Right. So I loved it. I loved the series. And in fact,
so did you watch it?
Yeah, I did rewatch
it. Did you watch it recently then?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's funny. It's not on HBO Max, oddly. It's, like Wayne said, it's all on YouTube. Is where I had to go to see it.
Well, I'm on YouTube right now. I'm rewatching the Bands on the Run series because
which is also great.
I just got back from seeing the Flickerstick reunion show, so that's been top of mind for me. That's I'm just like, it's been forever since I've watched it. I'm just going to go back and watch it.
I'm curious to see the scores and how those work out, because my scores definitely, as we go through this, will reflect. I kind of give credit to some extent for how well they covered the assignment, to be honest with you. There's some songs that if the assignment is seen in, if you show me your work, I gave you a little more credit if I feel like I feel that. And there's some songs that I don't feel it as much, or it feels a little, you know, maybe a little more of a generic Foo Fighters song that kind of doesn't. And also, I think there were certain ones that, because I haven't seen it since it came out in like 2014, that stuck out more heavily in my memory. And I think that that's a kind of a credit to the songs as well. There's some that as I listen to the songs, I really remember a lot of things about the episode. And there's others that I'm drawing a complete blank.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seemed to work because this was a commercial success. So it was a number one rock album and number one alternative album in the U.S. On the Billboard 200, it peaked at number two. I forgot to go look to see what kept it out of the number one spot. Peaked at number two in the U.K. as well. What I found was interesting is, so I'm just going to throw this out there. I really like this album. I've connected with it. Maybe it was because I was commuting during this time period where I listened to it a lot. But what I found interesting was this wasn't nominated for any Grammys. We've talked about the Grammy Awards and how they've been pretty kind to the Foo Fighters, where there were a few albums where they got the Grammy Awards, which, you know, we thought, maybe you got that Grammy because you're the Foo Fighters. But for these 2 years that they could have been eligible, the Grammys were dominated by Jack White. Best metal performance was Tenacious D, which, like, really? You beat Anthrax, Mastodon, Motorhead, and Slipknot? Tenacious D did. Okay. Best rock song in 2015 was Paramore's Ain't It Fun. Best rock song for 2016 was Don't Want to Fight from Alabama Shakes, which those are both good songs, but like Foo Fighters doesn't even get nominated.
Well, let me ask you this. Is this album, you know, does this fall into some sort of a weird loophole because it's a, essentially a soundtrack to something where it might not be eligible as a straight rock release? That's kind of what I would wonder a little bit, because I would think that they would get into the mix. Otherwise, I could see where if this being, you know, tied to a show specifically, they might not have it in, or they didn't submit it the same way, you know, which is something that you learn about the award stuff too, is that if it's tied to something else, maybe in order to be eligible for like Emmys or that sort of thing, that might have affected or impacted it. Because it is a little weird to me that they wouldn't, that there would be nothing that would show up as a nominee from this album. Because there's solid Foo Fighters songs.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So 2016, now I'm looking, best rock performance. See, I was looking at just best rock song. Best rock performance, they were nominated for Something from Nothing, but again, lost to Alabama Shakes. But the other nominees, so I...
Well, there goes my theory.
I want your guys' opinion. So the other nominees were Florence and the Machine's What Kind of Man, X's and O's from Elle King, and then Moaning Lisa Smile from Wolf Alice, which I don't know that song, but I know the Elle King and Florence and the Machine. I mean, technically, they're rock songs, but are they?
Not really. Not to me. I don't know.
X's and O's.
Genres become very weird.
That was a big song, X's and O's, I think.
But yeah, but is that rock? Do you think that's rock?
Yeah. I mean, that's a, maybe. That's a hard... That's a pretty vague genre to begin with. Going to loop in a lot of stuff.
So let me read the best rock album nominees. So it's James Bay with Chaos and the Calm. It's Kintsugi from Death Cab for Cutie, which, as much as I love Death Cab for Cutie, that's not a good album.
No.
It's just not. Highly Suspect's Mr. Asylum, which I love Highly Suspect, but I don't know. Slipknot's 5, The Gray Chapter, which that's really the first rock. Well, Highly Suspect would be considered rock as well. But the one that won it was Muse's Drones. Again, not Muse's best album, but that won best rock album because it's Muse. Am I sounding too old man get off my lawn with saying this kind of stuff? It kind of is, right?
Yeah. In all honesty, my opinion is that it didn't get nominated or win any Grammys because I don't think this is a very good Foo Fighters record, which doesn't mean that it's a bad record or they're bad songs. We've discussed on every episode that I've been on that since Weenie Beanie, I don't think they made a bad song. But nothing on here is extraordinary. Nothing on here is Pretender All My Life anything like that. There's nothing like that here.
Well, I think what you're saying, Wayne, that I do agree with. I don't know if I agree that there's nothing. I think there's a couple of really super solid songs on here. And then most of the rest of it is pretty good Foo Fighters. Sex and Pizza, right? And then but I think what you're saying that is maybe kind of correct is that as an album, it's just not built as an album. It's not built to have – it's built – this is a project. And I give Dave a lot of credit once again for going, here's this thing we're going to do. I'm not just going to mail it in and do the same old stuff every time. Here's this – I have this idea. I want to go do a documentary and I want to also be a filmmaker. And that's really what it comes down to. How can I do that? How can I – get the funding for that and let me take a crew out and all that sort of stuff. And what if I tie it to a Foo Fighters record? And so what you have is an album that doesn't necessarily play front to back like an album, and sequencing isn't really a consideration. I didn't really consider it much in the album either because that just is what it is. But it doesn't have your normal kind of ebbs and flows of an album. I think it doesn't have the normal construction.
And we've been pretty vocal about how we feel about sequencing on all these albums. And I actually I actually like the sequencing on this album.
I'm fine with it.
I do too.
Yeah. All right. You guys ready to dive into this?
Yep.
This will go pretty quick because, as a reminder, our scoring is based off of songs on the record. So, Wayne, how many on this one?
Only eight.
So, 8 points gets our top song. Next favorite song, 7 points on down to lowest score, one. You guys know the routine. All right.
I was surprised. It was weird scoring so few songs because I felt like all my scores seemed low. Well, every one of my scores, I was like, what? Why does everything seem low?
Considering the last time you, Wayne, and I got together, we were doing Summer Teeth from Wilco, which was like, I don't know, 36 songs or something like that. How many is on that one?
It's like 38. Remember,
17
17, yeah.
I don't know. It's a lot.
And we also did the double album, the Foo Fighters, In Your Honor. Yeah.
Yeah, we did In Your Honor recently as well.
So I imagined when I was scoring this that I could imagine a certain amount of glee in Wayne's demeanor as he's going through this, going, 8 songs, baby.
It's nice.
One split up, though. It might be technically 9. This is a split song.
Yeah. It's like...
All right. So Something for Nothing is first song. This was recorded in Chicago. It was their lead single off of this record. Came out a couple weeks before the whole album came out. And it was a hit. It was number one on the rock airplay charts. Hot rock and alternative charts peaked at 8. UK, it's another number one rock and metal hit for them in the UK. So this is recorded at Steve Albini's studio there in Chicago. We've already talked about Albini on our Pixies episode, if you remember, Wayne, about Surfer Rosa. Do we feel any influence from Albini on this song?
I don't hear anything.
And that's what I was going to say as well, because I'm like, I don't feel much of that Albini influence.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. I feel more of the Rick Nielsen, him diving in there is pretty cool. That's the other thing that I think that Dave, he does these projects that he's like, why don't I do this project? But then also, why don't I be able to have all of these, like, be a kid in a candy store and just have all these guests that I want to have on, which is, again, such a cool thing that he's able to do. He can just guest with whoever he wants, and everybody wants to work with him. And Rick Nielsen worked with him on the Sound City thing too.
And I think most of my criticisms are that he doesn't let the guests be themselves, it seems like. I don't hear Rick Nielsen or there's only one time that one of the guitarists actually seems to be somewhere between himself and Foo Fighters, which I really liked. There's nothing Nielsen about the guitar he plays. Yeah. I don't think the song doesn't make me think of Chicago. And once again, it's a solid song. It's a good Foo Fighters song, but he painted himself into a corner like he did with In Your Honor, but In Your Honor, he at least saw the whole thing through. Watching that one documentary episode, I feel that, like you, to what you said, Jeff, I think this was actually a filmmaking project, and this is a byproduct of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I disagree with you about this not being... I think this one actually evokes... You didn't watch this episode, right?
No.
Yeah, and this one evokes the episode really nicely, actually. And you've seen it recently, Kevin. I'm sure you can kind of speak to that. I mean, it evokes it very nicely. He's talking about... he's talking about the river under the... Into the wild on the ground. Button on a string. These are all things from the episode that he incorporates. He talks about the fire.
Chicago fire.
The Chicago fire,
Chicago fire.
Yeah. Oh, sweet ignition, be my fuse. He really does a nice job of incorporating the things from the episode. And this is one of the ones, again, that as I listen to the song, it quickly takes me back to those elements from the episode. It was an episode I liked an awful lot. And so that helps drive it for me It doesn't. You're right, Wayne. If you just listen to this and go, this is supposed to make me think of Chicago. I don't know that it immediately makes you think of Chicago, but when you watch the episode, the way he goes through things and the way he talks to people and incorporates the interviews, it makes you. It puts you right there, and you're like, this is the first one where you're like, oh, nice trick, nice. That's a nice magic trick. You did a good job with it.
You know what? It would help me think of Chicago, rock flute. Just give me a couple bars of Color in My World, and then I'll think about Chicago.
The best part about the documentary really is when they have someone like Rick Dielsen come in and Taylor Hawkins is just geeks out over these guys. It's the best part of every episode, I think, is when the guest stars and the love that Taylor and Dave have for like these old, you know, classic rock guys is. You know, infectious if you watch the show.
Yeah, it's cool. All right, scores. Kevin, what do you got?
This is a 7.
Wayne?
6.
Jeff?
6 for me as well.
Yeah, this is my 5. All right, Feast and Famine. Supposedly this was a single, second single. I don't recall hearing it on the radio. Did peak number 37 on the alternative songs chart, number 4 in the UK. This was recorded in Virginia. You've got some vocals from Pete Stahl and Skeeter Thompson, who were in a little band called Scream. There may have been another guy that you might know that was in Scream. His name was Dave Grohl. Here's the most shocking thing about this song. Considering that it is intended to be more of a punk song, considering that the guys from Scream are on it, Wayne and I have the same score for this. Is this not a punk song, or are you influencing me more to be punk?
I don't think he... I mean, it's the Foo Fighters, and while I don't expect him to go way outside of what they do, I thought they sped it up, and a lot of the punk for me was in the lyrics. I think this chorus has the biggest hook. I do like how he uses Scream. He gets Scream and Brains. I wish he could have got a Minor Threat in there somewhere, worked there into the lyrics. I thought that would have been a nice touch. But Feast and Famine, I think, and I didn't watch the episode, but to me, a city and an area it's got a largely poor urban population on one side, and then on the other side are these monuments and these manicured government buildings and fancy hotels for diplomats. I thought he kept punk rock ethos, if nothing else.
I think this one misses the mark a little bit for me in terms of he's too familiar with it. It's too much just him going home. If you're going to have it about exploring something new, explore something, you know, in a way that isn't just going home in that respect. Because I don't think it is. I don't think he's learning as much about this particular one. It's more like written from recollection or from his particular scene, as it were. So that kind of took it down a notch, I think, for me. I like the song, though.
Okay. Kevin, anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think like what Wayne said, I think Where Is Your Monument? I think that's definitely a Washington, D.C. that like Jeff was talking about earlier. He kind of works some of the city they're in and 14th and U, I believe, is where the Black Cat used to be. I think they moved it, but so there's a couple of references, a couple of D.C. references in there.
Scores, this is my 7. Wayne?
Also my 7.
Jeff?
5.
Is it because it missed the mark?
To be honest, maybe a little bit, but my top 3 songs were pretty clear to me.
Okay.
It wasn't, I don't think this doesn't get over my top 3, regardless of if it hit the mark better. I like the song a lot. I think it's, it rocks. I think it really moves well. It has a good Foo Fighters vibe. And again, I think it's just my 4th favorite song.
Okay. Kevin?
Also my 5.
Okay. All right. Next up, they go to Nashville for Congregation. This was the 3rd single off the record. I do recall hearing this on the radio. It was a number 1 rock chart single, number 4 in the UK on the rock and metal chart. All sorts of references to Nashville.
All sorts of references to Mississippi. I have been.
Yeah. So Zach Brown is on this one. I don't think he knew who Zach Brown was prior to this. Is that correct?
I thought he.
That is correct.
Yeah. Yes. Did he do the EP for him after this?
After this.
Yeah.
He says in the episode that he saw them play. He saw him play once, and then offered to produce. Yeah, the record.
Okay.
After seeing them once.
So I've been to Nashville probably 10 times because I did have a couple clients in the area, and I never went to the Bluebird.
I tried to go one time when we were there as a family, and you couldn't get in. I mean, it was insane trying to get tickets to go, and then we went and did the like stand outside to see if the five of us could get in. We did not, and then you had to do like a $40 Uber back into the city. It was nuts. This song I think does a really good job of. Again, this is probably my favorite episode of the show. I think that it's just a great episode. I think he captures all of these things really well, and captures them really well in the song. He captures the idea of the Ryman and that idea of the church and this was him introducing me to going, why don't you give Zach Brown a try? You know, if Dave Grohl if Dave Grohl thinks he's cool, this is exactly I know my entry point into where I went ahead and listened to some Zach Brown. Cause I was a little dismissive before. I'm not, a super big country guy, but, if Dave tells me that they're cool, I'm at least going to give him a shot. And since I've gone and seen Zach in concert, I enjoy some of his stuff and it's a good time. And his contributions in this episode are fun. I like the place that they recorded. If I'm not wrong, Kevin, is this kind of that all wood? It's a very like wood heavy studio.
Used to be a church, right?
Used to be a church. Yeah.
Yep.
It's a very cool studio. Really stuck out as well. And, I think this song is just fantastic. Really kicks really nicely.
Yeah. Wayne, anything on Congregation?
It's a nice Foo Fighters song, but I think if you're going to go to Nashville and you're going to talk about, I don't hear anything.
It's nice.
Like you can do something. I mean, you don't have to make it into, you don't have to use a banjo or anything, but you can give things a country influence, or even if you're going to go Congregation and try to rile up a church, you can put an organ in there and get some harmonies and get it more churchy. But also the Seventh Son reference and the fork in the road reference sounds very Crossroads, where all that's, the Tallahatchie River is in Mississippi. So he's mixing his metaphors, and
no, it's all comes from the interviews.
But I didn't watch that, so I listened to the record and rated it based on what I heard.
It's a companion. It's a companion piece. That's the point. It's a companion piece. And if you listen to it outside of that companion piece,
but I can form my opinion on just the record.
Sure you can, but you're wrong. It's okay to be wrong.
I'm not wrong that Tallahatchie River is in Mississippi.
But that comes from the interview specifically in it, and it's exactly what's being talked about in the episode. And so he's writing from the people that he's meeting and experiencing, and that's what he's doing. And so that's what he set out to do. Like you said earlier, it's a film project. It's a film project first that has a soundtrack that goes with it. And so as the soundtrack to the film project, it actually captures it really nicely, because he's recounting the tales that are told to him by the people that he's encountering that are in Nashville.
Okay. I mean, Wayne, were you expecting them to like go all Dylan Nashville skyline?
I'm expecting them to make a Foo Fighters record. Once again, he has this concept, and I love it. I like that he doesn't just sit back and make another Foo Fighters record. I love that about Dave Grohl. And from watching the 45 minutes of the Seattle one, I'm gonna watch them all. But at the same time, if you're going to say these songs are influenced or about these cities and you use Nashville, then I do expect something musically or instrumentation wise to at least evoke the sound that people associate with Nashville, at least.
I don't think that's the project, though. He's saying that they're going to make a Foo Fighters record. with the Foo Fighters writing what they've learned from these individual experiences in cities, he's not writing, he's not presenting, he's not changing genres from them. He might have guests, or he might have some people that are part of the music scene there participating, right, like Zach Brown does, or like he does later with Gary Clark. But he's not saying, you know, that they're going to change up their musical style. He's writing Foo Fighters songs about what they've learned while they're there, and also not really just doing it from a perspective. And that was my objection to the DC or the Virginia one is again, I feel like it's more stuff that's ingrained in him, and I don't think it was new information to him. I don't think it was the deep dive. And this, he does the deep dive in the episode, and he does really get into this stuff, and he learns. And so it's not just about, you know, again, the Bluebird is really a very modern, a modern part of that music scene. It's not so much about the old Nashville country and all that stuff, no, but that's about the people that he meets and he talks to and he interviews and gets the flavor of whatever's there and going on. And so, and that's the film project of it.
So my question is, so going back to, do we hear Rick Nielsen in this song? My question is, do we hear Zach Brown in this song?
More so, I don't, more so than Rick Nielsen. I mean, that I, okay. I feel like I, without watching the documentary, I can pull out the part where it is Zach Brown, and but it feels stifled. I mean, it doesn't feel like he gets, okay, to be Zach Brown, and I don't, the part that, without watching the documentary, why bring Zach Brown in? Why bring Rick Nielsen in? Why bring Joe Walsh in and then not let them be Rick Nielsen or Joe Walsh or Zach Brown?
It's funny, in the episode, I think Dave like went out to lunch or something and comes back and I guess three of the guys in the studio are wearing cowboy hats and he's like worried that, like, he's like, hey, we're still making a Foo Fighters record here. We're not making a country album, guys, just because we're here. So I think it's kind of what, like Jeff said, it's still a Foo Fighters record, still a Foo Fighters song. Yeah. It's really the only references to, you know, are in the lyrics. And then there might be mixed messages, like Wayne says. Yeah.
I mean, I have that specific problem on a later song, but it's specifically because of where they recorded it. You know what I mean? I mean, that would be my issue, and we'll get to that when we get there. But
sure. All right. Wayne, your score?
5.
Jeff?
8.
Kevin?
Yeah, this is my 8. I love this song. It's one of my favorites of all their albums.
Okay. This is my 6. All right. What Did I Do / God Is My Witness is next up. And this was 4th single, but I don't recall it getting any airplay whatsoever. UK singles chart peaked at 165. Alternative songs chart in the US 37. So didn't really get much play. Similar to Gary Clark Jr., doesn't get much play, but should. 'Cause the dude is fantastic. So he's the guest on this. This was recorded in Austin. Again, I haven't seen the show. So, Jeff, anything to glean from the Austin?
To be honest with you, this one again. In hindsight, my memory is just very vague on this one. I don't have a lot of recollection of the episode. I have a recollection of Gary Clark, and I think this is the guest that stands out the most. By far, I think Gary Clark is to do some Gary Clark stuff late in the song. That is pretty cool. I don't remember this episode as well, and the lyrics don't quickly evoke the episode for whatever reason. So I think if I rewatch this series, I might score a little differently too, but I don't remember this being a favorite of mine from an episode perspective for whatever reason.
Okay. Wayne, I have the benefit of seeing your score.
And so there's a couple cities that the song does feel like it evokes that city, but those cities are both very eclectic. Like Austin has a lot going on. And so it isn't, I mean, as much as it's in Texas, so there's always there's a country western vibe to it, but it's also really bluesy. You got Stevie Ray Vaughan is from there, we've had guests that do much more, more Americana and even pop stuff that are from there. So the city in itself has this cool eclectic vibe. So I think for me, at least, I was able to get that from the music. And this time the guest sounded like the guest, and not only did he sounded like an amazing guitar, bluesy guitar player who's remembers that this is a Foo Fighters song and gives it a little bit of something that isn't necessarily him making his best effort to be a part of the song. The song, this was to me, as far as the project went, where they hit it out of the park.
Kevin, what do you got on this one?
Yeah, this is episode, to remind Jeff, this is the one they tape it at Austin City Limits, right on stage. Young man channeling Noyne by the X of his hand is actually from a story that Gary Clark Jr. tells about when they put an X on his hand because he's too young to drink in the clubs. So they actually pull a lyric from like one of his stories.
Yeah.
And then like kind of the best part of the episode is at one point they need a piano and the Austin City Limits guy is like, oh, we have this piano over here. And so Dave is like, who's playing on this piano? And the guy starts naming off Fats Domino and Tom Waits and Ray Charles. And Dave is like geeking out over this piano that's like that all these guys have touched. So it's,
yeah,
it's
I completely forgot that, but I remember that. It was a really cool moment.
Yeah. That being said, it's still my two. So just ran out of numbers.
Okay. Jeff, what's your score on this one?
It's four, and I mean, I think I like it better than that. I like the change between the two songs. I really like Gary Clark's part on it. I like the other songs on the album better.
Okay.
It wasn't a very memorable episode just from hindsight, but I think if I might score it differently if I watch the whole thing again.
Yeah. Wayne, one more time for your score.
I gave it my eight. I don't think the God is my witness part is... I don't think if it was missing, it would affect my score. I think I mostly like what happens up to that point, but I don't dislike that part.
Okay. All right. Outside is next. Fifth song on the record. Fifth single off the record. Y'all seeing a trend on this?
A lot of singles.
Lots of singles. All right. This includes Joe Walsh and also Christopher Goss, which I had to look up. I guess he was the lead singer of Masters of Reality. Anybody know Masters of Reality?
Is that a Black Sabbath cover band?
I mean, that's... I have to imagine that they got their band name from Black Sabbath, right?
I know him a little bit from the Sonic Highways, or not the Sonic Highways, the Sound City project as well. I think he was involved with that a little bit. And I know he produces Queens of the Stone Age and was a producer, I think, for what's that? Caius. And so he's also kind of known as like, I think they kind of refer to him as the godfather of desert rock or something along those lines.
That would make sense considering this was recorded at Joshua Tree.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
De La Luna.
Yeah. So he kind of is known for that vibe.
Okay. This was peaked at number 7 on the rock charts in the US, number 10 on the rock and metal charts in the UK. And I don't remember it getting any airplay, but that might have just been my crappy locale here in Florida. So you mentioned on the previous song that you get to hear Gary Clark doing his thing. You get to hear Joe Walsh do his thing for about 12 seconds. It's a great 12 seconds, but you have to see Joe Walsh.
You can look it up on YouTube. You have to see it though. It's
okay.
It's amazing. Like he's in the foreground playing the solo, and Taylor Hawkins is like behind him on a couch, just geeking out. Like, can't believe that Joe Walsh is playing on. He's like, this is my new favorite Foo Fighters song because Joe Walsh plays that 12 seconds. It's really kind of infectious. It's really great. And then at the end of it, Butch Vig is like, okay, we nailed it. One take. And I guess that's the take they used.
There you go.
So it's you don't have to watch the whole show either. You can just see that clip.
Yeah. I love Joe. I've mentioned that on number of episodes. So just the fact that I gave this my two, I kind of hate my score for that, but it's really a two for me anyways. Wayne, anything on this one?
Well, and I think here, I mean, when you have a city like LA that's been the epicenter of so many different music scenes, I thought they were able to capture more of that. And then this one, there's a part where they use some harmonies to kind of give you that Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Laurel Canyon thing. I thought he doubled down on the trying to make sure it was clear that he was talking about Southern California would be the only thing. And then there's not enough Joe Walsh. That's, if you're going to use him, use him.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff, anything else?
I don't like his vocals on it, to be honest with you. I don't like what they do. The effect on his vocals doesn't work for me. It does seem to try to channel a little bit of that Queens of the Stone Age vibe. I'm not a big Queen of the Stone Age guy, so that affects my score. I don't remember the episode. I remember the part that Kevin's talking about. I remember them geeking out over that, and that's fun. I don't remember a lot of the other. I guess they probably get into like Pappy and Harriet's and stuff in there too, don't they, Kevin? Or
a lot of it is actually Caius is a big Caius, part of okay. it. And a lot of it is about the history of the studio.
Okay.
And just who's run through there and who's recorded there. Because the studio is like in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Overall, it's my least favorite. For me, it's my one on this.
Okay. Kevin, what's your score?
Oh, I like this one. This is a 6.
Okay. Wayne?
4.
Okay. In the Clear is next, which was recorded in New Orleans. And this was not a single. They ended the singles with Outside. No other singles. However, we'll talk about the last song because they did make the rounds on some talk shows with that song. All right. Not a super memorable song. They recorded this with the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. I like it. It's fine. I think we're all kind of in the same boat that it's like, it's not a bad song. But again, going back to what we've been saying a lot on these episodes, pizza, sex, and Foo Fighters, like, can't go wrong. It's nice, but I don't have anything. I have no notes for this whatsoever.
This is the one that I think is the most disappointing in terms of not involving, because you've specifically recorded at Preservation Hall, and I've been there, and I know that vibe
it's
that's
rockin'.
There. And
but in a different way, it's a jazz rockin' vibe, not
it's an awesome venue. It's a super cool venue. There's so much cool history, but then I do feel like this song ends up feeling a tad generic. And they credit Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and boy, if you think Rick Nielsen disappears in it, I can't tell you where the horns are in this thing. I mean, if you're gonna tell me Preservation Hall Jazz Band is on this, that should be heard. I mean, if you don't want to make it jazz, that's fine, but you can't tell me they're on there and then I can't pick out where they're at all. And they make them such a heavy part of the episode that it ends up being a little weird to me that, I remember when they got to the point where they did the song in the episode and I was like, huh? Like they didn't, it felt like they were leading up to really incorporate them and then it just feels like they didn't.
Wayne, anything on this one? Or are you like us where you're like, I don't have any notes? God,
Jeff stole all my thunder. Yeah, it's you have a jazz band in a venue that's literally started as a museum and they let the jazz artists play for tips and everybody came to see the music and they turned it into a venue. And then I can't hear horns. If they're in there, they're buried. It's fairly easy to make something sound jazzy and they don't. They had a whole jazz band to help them, and they fought the concept.
Yeah. Kevin, anything on this one?
No, I mean that's just a couple. There's a couple of New Orleans, the paddle wheel and the second line in the lyrics. But like you guys said, there's really nothing jazzy about it.
Yeah. Okay. What's your score on that one?
It's a 4.
Okay. Jeff.
3.
Me too. Wayne.
Also 3.
Okay. Now we're going to go to Seattle for Subterranean. This includes Ben Gibbard. You might know him from Death Cab for Cutie. And if you do want, shameless plug, if you want some Death Cab Convo, episode 208 with DL Rossi, we discuss plans. And shout out to DL, he's got some new music coming out too. So go check the both of those things out. All right. So Seattle, Wayne, you did see that episode.
45 minutes of it. Yeah, I will finish after this.
Okay. All right. Do we get much Seattle references in this song? Because, like I lived in the area for 20 plus years.
It's a lot more about the studio. It's a lot more about them digging the studio, and he does try to tie it in. If I remember correctly, he tries to tie it into the, you know, to the Seattle underground. You know, the underground city, and so the subterranean thing. That's the whole idea. I will tell you that this one, I was so excited for this episode. You know, with the ties, the Seattle ties. And this was the most disappointing episode, you know, in the entire series for me. And the most disappointing song when they got to the song that I was just like, what? This is the one I was looking forward to. And I remember it feeling when I was watching it, you know, watching it week by week. I remember getting to this episode and going, that's it. That's the Seattle one. And I was not super thrilled with it.
Yeah. Okay. Kevin, anything on this one?
Yeah. I mean, like Jeff said, it's really about the studio. The studio is kind of a cool story. It's kind of built into the side of a hill. And every time Robert Lang wanted to make it bigger, he just dug more dirt out of the side of the hill.
Which we talked about that on our first episode.
With Barrett Jones, right?
Yeah. Barrett Jones, yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of a neat. So like, you know, like when he brings Dave around to look at like, oh, this room wasn't here back when you were here. It's kind of an interesting story. But yeah, this is like the song itself is like an intro to a good Foo Fighters song that really never goes anywhere, and it goes there for 6 minutes. So
that's a great way to describe it. I think it's an intro. It would be a cool Foo Fighters intro, and then if it kicks into that second half, that's something different. It might have really worked. I think that this one, I felt similar to the one I did a little bit with, like I said, the Virginia one, where, again, I think he's so close to Seattle that maybe he doesn't explore Seattle in the same way as somebody new to it would. And it is more about the studio.
And I think Dave agrees with us, because I think, like, if I look at set list, they've played this live once.
Huh.
Yeah.
So
I didn't check set list. Did they play a lot of these songs? Quite a bit.
I got, let me look at here. Something from Nothing, 126
something
times.
Something from Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Congregation, 118. And after that, everything's pretty low.
Yeah. Okay. My one, Wayne.
Also my one.
Jeff.
Two.
Kevin.
My one.
Okay. And then we're going to wrap it up. We're going to go to New York for I Am a River. Includes Tony Visconti and Christine Young. Visconti, of course, tied to Bowie. Christine Young, believe she also sang with Bowie, but I know that she's also done a bunch of other work with Tony Visconti, which is probably how she got pulled into this one. Do we hear much Visconti on this song, though?
He doesn't
arrange the strings.
What is he credited with? He's arranged the strings. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. He does the arrangement. Right. Yes. And there, you actually do hear the strings are there.
You do hear the strings.
For sure. Yeah. So yeah, that's what his credit is.
Does this capture New York though?
I think it captures what they did in the episode.
Okay.
Again, he
says Subway.
This was one of my favorite episodes. This is probably my second favorite episode of the series. It's the one that stuck out to me. Just again, where he went in the, you know, from a documentary standpoint, Nashville and then this, or Chicago, or right there, kind of neck and neck. I like where he went. I thought it was an interesting episode. I like the song they got out of it. All the way around for me, I really dug this one.
Cool. Kevin, anything on this one?
Yeah, I looked it up after this. This is the last episode of the show, and they're talking to the owner of the magic shop, and he's complaining about how, you know, these studios are going out of business, and they actually did go out of business a couple years later. I looked it up. Supposedly Dave Grohl tried to save it, and the landlord wasn't having it. So it's kind of a bummer of an episode at the end. But that's what happened.
Yeah. Wayne, anything on this one?
No. For New York, Tony Visconti's great. But I once to use him as the string arranger. I mean, to be have your special guest be the guy who arranges the strings when there's so many things musically that have happened in New York and people in the industry from New York. It just seems like an odd choice. I haven't seen the episode. Maybe it'll all make sense then. But at the point when I listened to it, I scratched my head a little bit.
Okay. I dig this song. I've always dug this song. It's a great album closer to me as well.
Yeah, the strings. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, with the strings, I just, I dig it. It's my 8. I do remember they were on the Jimmy Fallon show doing this song. So I think it was Fallon. It was either Fallon or Letterman. It could have been Letterman because Letterman absolutely loved the Foo Fighters. It was one of those. I can't remember which one. Can you tell I haven't done a whole lot of research on this one? I didn't watch all the episodes. All right. My 8. Wayne, what was your score again?
2.
Jeff?
This is my 7. It flipped back and forth with Congregation. I had it 8, and then I moved to 7. I like this one a lot. I like this episode a lot.
All right. Kevin?
Yeah, this is my 3, but I feel bad about it because it does really work as an album closer, I think. It's sequence where it should be.
I mean, the good news is with a album of only 8 songs, there's only going to be 3 songs that are left out of our top 5.
Yeah.
So that's the good news. All right. Any guesses on number 1?
Well, I guess it's Congregation if 2 of us had it top, but
yeah, it's Congregation. All right. Then we've got a tie for 2nd. Average score of 6 for Something from Nothing in the Feast and Famine. And I Am a River, because of Jeff, yours and my high scores, gives it an average score of 5. So that's our 4th. And then rounding out the top 5 is the What Did I Do? God Is My Witness track. Average score of 4.5. So there's your top 5. Top 5 for Sonic Highways. Solid record. I would say I think there's a lot of Foo Fighters fans out there that don't revere this album very highly. I like it a lot. I will say this. I threw this out on Twitter saying we're recording this. Let me just throw out a couple. Justin Steiner said, "Don't know that I have a favorite song, but I like it more than the general consensus." That's about the kind of quotes that I'm getting for this album, where they're like, "I like the record as much as you do. Yeah, it's not high on my list, but I like it." So again, Sex, Pizza, and Foo Fighters.
I think
that's where we're at.
Yeah, and I agree with that. It's just in a standalone album. I think it has some pretty good Foo Fighter songs on it. I really do. But I think that it works best as a companion piece, as an audiovisual piece. It really translates best when you are putting it in context of the whole and understanding the goal of the project and understand the goal of the project along with watching what the interviews were and what situations he put himself in and who he met with and what they told him and how he incorporated their stories into the songs. And so from like more of an, it's almost more of like an art project than just an album to me. So I think that's where it really works the best. And that's why the songs that stick out to me as ones I like the best are the ones that did a good job of really making me remember the episode. The episodes were the most memorable.
Well, I will watch this after I'm done watching Bands on the Run.
Yeah. Again. Tell me what you think about it. I'm interested to hear it. I'm surprised you never saw it, but I guess it was with the HBO access. It was,
I tried to get your login from you, and you wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't. I don't remember that. I do not remember.
I'm kidding. I don't.
If that conversation happened, I'm certainly not going to acknowledge it on a recorded episode and lose my access to HBO.
Right.
Exactly.
I would never.
I don't think it was login. I don't think it was login when it came out either. I think I was. I'm pretty sure I was straight cable in 2014. I'm not.
Actually, 2014.
I'm not a very modern dude.
What? You can watch some stuff online. I remember. Yeah, I'm not going to incriminate some other individuals who gave me access to certain things. So, you know who you are. Thanks, guys. Love you, George. All right,
Washington. George Washington is who he's talking about. If you're going after him for piracy, George Washington.
All right, Kevin. Any last comments on this one?
I think, like you said, it's probably nobody's favorite Foo Fighters record, but the thing I like about it is 8 songs and there's no filler, I think.
Yeah.
Like Subterranean is definitely my number one, but even that I can deal with. There's no weenie beanie, you know?
Yeah, I'm not skipping Subterranean.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right. There's no weenie beanie, aka Barrett's favorite song.
I know.
Or white limo. There's no white limo.
No white limo.
There's no white limo on this. All right. Well, we've already divulged what our favorite Foo Fighters albums are because we've talked about each of those. So, Kevin, which one is your Foo Fighters favorite episode?
Probably Wasting Light. Album? Wasting Light. Probably.
Yeah.
All right. All right. You got a companion now.
Yep.
Yeah. That's two for Wasting Light.
Well, I said Echoes.
You did?
I did.
Right. Never mind.
It's Brian's.
Brian's is Wasting Light, who was not able to be on the episode.
Who was not able to make it for that episode.
Right.
So, I think we're going to have him. I think he's going to come on for the Medicine at Midnight.
All right.
After I'm back from my break.
We don't have that scheduled yet, right?
We do not.
Okay, we can probably do this off air, but I was just trying to make sure because it's been a few weeks since we talked about schedule, and I'm trying to like remember what I'm supposed to prep it.
Scheduling is so not on my priority list right now, as Kevin can attest, because I gave him the recording link and the scoring spreadsheet link today. Actually, I gave all of you guys those links today. So
yeah.
Apologies.
Where do you live, Kevin? Where are you from?
Boston.
Boston, okay.
Outside of Boston, yeah.
All right.
Glad to see your internet's recovered, Ben.
Have you had some internet issues?
He shut us down. I had to vamp, and then I had to tell the guests that we're going to need to reschedule.
Oh, really? That bad?
Yeah, we had a storm in the area and knocked it out for 45 minutes.
Florida. Hashtag Florida. Yeah. Ron, hashtag... Yeah. Tropical storm Ron DeSantis.
So it's thrown my. I'm taking 5 weeks off from the podcast because we've had to reschedule the second half of that episode to do that. And then if you bastards record an episode and make me have to edit it, so that
we would no editing needed, baby.
It's gonna be. Pristine.
Wayne and I are doing 3 weeks.
Like we're 250 times.
Wayne and I are doing 3 weeks of rehearsals. We will have that tight.
We're gonna have midday meetings and stuff. Make sure
we're scripting the whole thing. We're gonna sound pretty. We're gonna sound a little robotic because it'll all be scripted, and our reading skills are not strong. But you won't have to edit it.
I look forward to that. I look forward to it. So I just slap on the theme song at the beginning, and then we call it good. Is that what you're saying?
I think Jeff's right.
Don't even put the theme song.
Oh, I gotta have the theme song. Some things are traditional. Oh yeah, you can't.
So you'll have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the T-shirt. You better stick with the T-shirt.
I bought a special T-shirt just for the episode.
Yeah, I'm going shirtless. I'm going to go shirtless for this one. That's how I'm feeling. So
it's a good thing it's audio only.
Right, right. Well, for the audience,
it's good for everybody else. Yeah.
For it's, Wayne, so it's going to be an awkward hour.
It's good. It's
that's a bonus for Wayne.
Just so you know, Wayne, as the host, you can turn off the camera. I'll show you how to
do it. Oh, man. Come on. That's not...
I can't believe he did that. I mean, if I yeah. would just say this, Ben, if this was me and I had that information, I wouldn't tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have...
Yeah, don't tell him that. I was gonna turn the fan on so my nipples were hard, too. So
I would have made you look at that the whole time and laughed. Laugh hysterically.
This is getting out of control. All right, let's wrap this up. As a reminder, find all of the old episodes. Go to recordsrevisitpodcast.com for that. You can find all of our happenings on the socials. You know where we're at on that. Patreon. Kevin is a member of our Patreon. You can get episodes. I keep saying you can get episodes early, but you know how it's been for the last Sometimes. Several weeks. I have been very deficient in that. However, I have been providing some cutting room floor material, which you can hear Wayne and all of the issues that we have sometimes with internet issues and whatever else. So it's hopefully that's fun enough to keep you guys interested in being Patreon revisitors, but go to patreon.com/recordsrevisitedpodcast for all those details. And let's do the outro. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Yep. Please go support the arts. Go to a live show. Buy a t-shirt of the band. Buy a record. Visit a record store, and not just on Record Store Day. We are Records Revisited, and we are
out.
I'm sorry, that was a little premature, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.